I think it is fair to say, having grown up in her house, that my mother was a courageous woman. Not only because she had four sons, but just as one example, she allowed one of them, my older brother Paul, to have a boa constrictor in the house. And it escaped more than once. But that's a story for another time. I want to tell you something else that she did, and why something that happened as a result of it illuminates the deepest dilemma of human nature. One day, for reasons still unclear to me, she allowed us, the three older ones, to buy a dartboard and darts, which is a not very safe thing to allow three boys in their teenage years to do, given how often we fought. And one day we were playing darts, and remember, this was a mother who was a Jewish mother, after all, and knew when you were playing with marshmallows that you could poke someone's eye out with that thing. But one day we were playing darts, and the dartboard was full, and my brother Paul, one of my two older brothers, said to me, "David, I know it's your turn, but don't throw the dart, because I'm about to go in front of the board and take the others out. So don't throw the dart." Now, you understand, I had two powerful motivations for not throwing the dart. One was that I actually love my brothers. I still do, and I really didn't want to hurt them too much. And the second is, he was my older brother, and therefore bigger than me, and therefore could beat me up, and often did. So he walked in front of the dartboard, and what did I do? I threw the dart. I don't know why. To this day, I don't know why. I don't even know if I entirely heard what he said, although I remember it. And I still have this snapshot image in my head of my brother standing in front of the dartboard with a dart hanging from his elbow, looking at me first incredulously, like, "How could you possibly do this?" And then his eyes filled with fury. And he chased me around the house, and you don't need to know the rest. But I wonder, why did I throw the dart? And in this, I think, is a central question, not only about human nature, but about our parsha. I want you to transfer that story to ancient Egypt. Pharaoh says, "I'm not going to let your people go." And God says, "Turn the Nile to blood." And the whole river turns to blood. That's God's way of saying, "Don't throw the dart. I'm bigger than you. I'm stronger than you. Just let them go." And over and over and over again, Pharaoh says, "No, I'm not going to let them go." Despite the fact that it is incomprehensible that after blood, frogs, vermin, cattle disease, boils, all these plagues, that he wouldn't let them go. What's the matter with him? And I think the Torah is so perplexed that the only thing it can say is God must have hardened his heart, because what idiot would throw the dart? Again and again and again and again. And yet he does. And then, once someone finally takes away his dartboard and the Israelites leave, then we discover that this same inability to do what makes sense and is in your self-interest and is prudent and is wise and is obvious, this same inability to do what anybody with half a brain would do, moves from Pharaoh to the Israelites. Because remember, they've just seen the 10 plagues of Egypt and the splitting seas and the thunder and the lightning and all of that around Sinai. And what do? They worship the golden calf. And you can just imagine God with his head in his hands saying, "What's with these people? What do I have to do to show them not to do stupid things?" And when you read the Torah, if you divest yourself for a minute of all the religious school education and all the stuff that we've said along the way, and you just read it as a story, it makes no sense. What's the matter with these people? When the creator of the world says, please do this, you do it. If you know, and you did from your reaction to the story, that you should do it even when your older brother says it, then when the person who actually shaped the stars, the seas, the mountains, and your soul says it, obviously, who's going to do the opposite except everybody in the Torah? But really, we understand. Because we do the same thing. And I'm not talking now about God says keep kosher, and some of you, I've heard, don't always. I'm talking about things that we know will hurt us, that we know are wrong or bad, and we ought not do, and we think as we're doing them, I shouldn't be doing this. And we know we will regret it tomorrow morning, or next week, or next year, and yet, over and over and over again, we do it. It's what psychologists sometimes call the repetition compulsion. You do the same thing that you know is going to end in the same way in the hope that somehow, miraculously, it'll end up differently this time, and when I throw the dart, nobody will be upset. And this is, in some ways, the central human dilemma. Socrates used to think, well, obviously, I mean, it's thousands of years ago, so he probably still doesn't think it, but Socrates taught, let me put it that way, that if human beings knew what was in their self-interest, they would do the right thing, and it was all a function of teaching people what's in their self-interest. He was a great mind and a great teacher, but it seems naive, because we constantly do things against our self-interest, and we know it's against our self-interest, and we do it anyway. There's this, when you're beating your chest and talking about your sins during the high holidays, one of the sins is running to do evil. And I remember thinking, who runs to do evil? Okay, so you do bad things, but who's in a hurry to do bad things? And then I realized, when you're going to do something wrong, very often you do it quickly as though that will get it over with, right? I'll eat the whole box of cookies in 5 minutes, and then it won't count. Whereas if I leave it in there, I'm going to eat several every day, and then it will count. It's not that we don't know that we'll regret doing it. It's that we do it in spite of ourselves and even play tricks on ourselves to get us to do bad things that we know we shouldn't do, but we do them anyway. And from the time of the Torah till today, that hasn't changed. From the crooked timber of humanity, said Immanuel Kant, a philosopher who lived some 1,800 years after Socrates and had learned a thing or two, from the crooked timber of humanity, he said, nothing straight can be made. In other words, we're always going to have knotty, recalcitrant, difficult, disobedient, passionate, problematic souls. Now, this is probably of no help to you. And if it weren't for the fact that the dart story is a pretty good story, you'd probably be wondering why I'm bringing all this up. Because it's always good to know that your rabbi had an evil inclination from youth. The reason I bring it up is because tonight we're having the Sinai Akiba dinner dance. And we're honoring Rabbi Shenlin, who for decades has been the principal of Sinai Akiba. And Sinai Akiba and Jewish education in general and what Rabbi Shenlin has given his life to is the only partial antidote to the problem that I just described. Education, and by education, I don't mean teaching higher mathematics. I mean education of the spirit and of the soul. It's the only thing that gives people a little bit of a chance that next time they won't throw the dart because they will have learned something. Education of character. Why is it that God doesn't just give up at the golden calf? Because God says, I can teach these people. That's what the Torah is. Nowhere in the Torah does it say, once you study this, you will stop sinning. Because we know better. We will never stop sinning. Not only in ignorance, but also with malice and forethought, we will never stop sinning. We won't stop hurting each other and being callous and doing things we ought not do and rationalizing things that we know somewhere deep inside of us are not correct. But we can make little changes, little adjustments, steps to teshuvah all along the way. And it starts when we're children. Teaching our children that the most important things they will carry through their lives is not their diploma, but their character. And that's what it means to be in Jewish education. And that's what it means to have a school that is associated with a synagogue, both our religious school and preeminently Sinai Akiba. It means that we understand that you never grow out of the impulse ever to throw the dart. That we all have darknesses and struggles and difficulties. And that the Torah is not an antidote and it's not a vaccine, it's a guide. It doesn't prevent the disease and it doesn't assure that it will not afflict you, but it gives you a fighting chance. If you ask yourself whether the Jewish community throughout the generations has been, by and large, kind and good and decent, if the answer is yes, it's not because we're any better than any other people. It's because we took this lesson seriously. That you have to educate people over and over again. The plagues were a process of educating the Egyptians, but it wasn't enough. The Torah was a process of educating the Israelites, but it wasn't enough. And that's why it has to be done in every generation, with every child. When we honor Rabbi Shendlin tonight, it will be because he's given his career and his life to exactly this mission, which is the Jewish mission. If you look in the Talmud and you ask, why did God give the mitzvot? You know what answer the Talmud gives? Rak, which means only. In other words, this is the only reason God gave the mitzvot. Litzaref et habriot, to refine human character. In other words, to make us better. So when we are a little bit better, not only do we fulfill our mission as human beings, but we bring honor and glory and thanks to God, who made us to be just a little bit better. Shabbat Shalom.